Well, did I say it or not? What is the myth? What is the fact? What's the rumor? What's the truth? We're going to set the record straight today. Some exciting interviews also.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, do I want to establish a theocracy? Do I want to set up a situation in America where followers of Jesus rule and reign, and basically we take over and enforce our views on everyone else? And maybe in addition to that, I want to require all Christians to follow the law of Moses, and I reject grace. Are any of these charges true? Of course not. Of course not. But we're going to set the record straight here. Do you know, on another front, that speaking at the recent fundraiser for the Human Rights Campaign, former President Clinton commended them now expanding their reach, expanding their opposition to those who hold to biblical principles or to those who hold to conservative moral principles, to now attacking those of us who are asked to discuss these issues overseas. So President Clinton actually attacks people like me, not by name, but in the mischaracterized, demonized way. No surprise whatsoever. Oh, and someone on Twitter said I'm one of the main false prophets in the world today. Welcome my world, Michael Brown. Welcome to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. What do I actually believe about grace? What do I actually believe about Christians being salt and light? What do I actually believe about our relationship to the law of Moses? We'll talk about those issues. I'll take your calls as well. And I've got a neat interview coming your way with some tremendously encouraging news from Israel. I mean, really encouraging. I mean, Russian Jews responding powerfully to the gospel that was presented to them. Also, check out my latest article. Which is called The Myth of the Wonderful Life Gospel. The Myth of the Wonderful Life Gospel. And in fact, let me start there before we get any further into the broadcast. You've all read in the book of Acts how Saul of Tarsus had his encounter with Jesus and his life was radically changed. And Jesus says to him, "Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me?" And he said, "Who are you, Lord?" Paul says that. Saul says that to Jesus, "Who are you, Lord?" And Jesus said, "I'm Jesus of Nazareth, whom you're persecuting." Well, here's the contemporary American version of what follows. And Paul said to the Lord, "What do you have for me?" And Jesus said to Paul, "I have a wonderful life of health, wealth, and success for you." And Paul said to Jesus, "And what do you require of me?" Jesus said to Paul, "I require nothing of you at all. I just wanted to take away your guilt, make you happy. Simply believe that I'm good. Say this little prayer, and I'd be honored to have you as part of my family." And Paul said to Jesus, "That's an incredible deal. I'll take it. Is that the gospel?" No. Is that what happened with Saul of Tarsus, with Paul? No. What the word says is that Paul says to Jesus, "What shall I do, Lord?" And the Lord said to him, "Rise and go into Damascus, and there you will be told all that is appointed for you to do." In other words, Saul of Tarsus, later known as Paul the Apostle, but his whole life known as Saul and Paul, depending on which circles he was in, he understood that if Jesus was Lord, then he was required to follow him. He understood that if Jesus was Lord, then there was a responsibility. He understood that new life in Jesus, as he taught it later, meant he has saved us, freely forgiven us, given us eternal life, not based on anything we've done, but based on his grace and goodness alone. When we put our trust in him, he saves us and forgives us, and then he owns us. Then we live to do his will. That's the gospel. Forget the modern version. I'm talking about the real gospel. All right, back with an amazing report from Israel with my dear friend Sid Roth.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, friends, we often tell you what's happening in the world and society, some of the tough, difficult things that are going on, always with hope, always with faith. But we'll talk about the bad news straight on. We also give you as much good news as we can, and I want to give you some amazing good news. I have been friends with Sid Roth now for 30 years. We first met in 1984, and as long as I've known Sid, he's burned for two things. He's burned to see Jewish people saved, come to faith in Jesus, come to know Yeshua as their Messiah, and he's burned to see God's power, not in some abstract way, but to see God's power demonstrated in the changing of lives and to the glory of God. And Sid has recently returned from a trip to Israel, and what happened there is quite extraordinary, and I wanted Sid to share this with you today. Sid, I've been with you so many times on radio and TV. It's my great joy to welcome you to my broadcast today.
It's a privilege to be with you, Mike. I heard a little bit as I was waiting on hold. It sounds really good. I think you finally moved into the realm God wanted you in.
Yeah, Sid, you encouraged me in the early days about 6+ years ago getting on daily radio and have been encouragement ever since. Sid, before we talk about Israel, how is it that you have been able to burn so consistently so many years? I've never known you to be way up, way down, but steady, passionate for the Lord these many years. Is there a key or keys you could share with my listeners?
You know, I wish there was. I can just tell you what happened to me. And as a result of what happened to me, that's the answer to your question. When I was 30 years of age, I got deeply involved in the New Age. If you ever read the book or saw the movie The Exorcist, I lived it. As a Jew that did not know anything about Jesus, I had nowhere to go for help. And the worst night of my life, I cried out, Jesus, I mean, I didn't want to live. I cried out, Jesus, help. And the love of God flooded my apartment, and I have been, if God would say anything to me, I would do it. Now, that was over 40 years ago, but I can tell you that experience of the reality of the devil and the reality of God so burned inside of me that, to me, it's natural to always be red hot for Jesus, always put God first. It's not it's not something I ponder. In fact, I ponder how Christians can backslide if they had a clue of what I've just talked about.
Yeah,
that's what I ponder.
You know, Sid, I remember Nancy and I were with you and your dear wife having dinner, and we asked a question. Okay, you pray for the sick. What about unbelief? What about struggling with doubt? How do you overcome that? And the question baffled you because you're so full of faith. At a practical level, Sid, when you came to faith, what happened to your marriage? What was going on at the time you came to faith, and what happened afterwards?
Well, I was separated from my wife for about a year, and that was the time I dabbled in the New Age. And the very first words that God spoke to me when he revealed who Jesus was, not so much a man told me. I knew in my heart Jesus was my Messiah because I prayed a prayer. You know, it wasn't a Billy Graham special. It was two words from a man that didn't care whether he lived or died. Jesus, help. And the first words I heard from God was, I hate divorce, return to your wife and daughter. And although I left my wife because it was a bad marriage, this was God talking to me. And I didn't say, let me think about it. I said, yes, sir. And Joyce and I have just celebrated our 50th, 5-0 wedding anniversary.
Wow. That is amazing. That's incredible. And for those who question these supernatural experiences, friends, that was not the voice of the devil telling Sid that he hated divorce and that Sid and Joyce needed to be joined back together. And obviously, Joyce has been tremendously transformed by the same gospel that transformed you.
You know, what was kind of interesting, my wife was raised Southern Baptist. When she got to college, she said she didn't want to call herself an atheist, So she called herself an agnostic, but all faith that she had was driven out of her. And then when we got married, she became an she converted to Orthodox Judaism. So you might say she was a Southern Baptist agnostic Orthodox Jew that didn't know Jesus. And so it took her a couple of years, and she was committed to making the marriage work. And I started out like a firecracker, and we started one of the first Messianic Jewish congregations, not the first, but one of the first in the United States, which you were part of, many years after we started it. And we had a wonderful Messianic Jewish rabbi that did all his preaching about Jesus from the Old Testament. And in particular, he preached on prophecies that were fulfilled. And one day, Joyce was a home alone, and she said, you know, I cannot deny that the Bible is real. I cannot deny. And there's all because of the prophecies about the Jewish people. The whole history of the Jewish people was laid out all in the Old Testament, including everything about Jesus, and which is what the first church had. We didn't have a New Testament. And she said, it wasn't like me. It was just like, I cannot deny this anymore. And that's how she got saved.
Now, Sid, you have been a passionate soul winner as long as you've been saved. When God changed your life, you wanted to share that with others. You have now a massive TV ministry, your radio ministry for many years. You travel and speak publicly. Are you basically now a professional evangelist, and you do these things on radio and TV, or do you still share the gospel privately?
Well, anyone that knows that goes out with me knows the answer to the wonderful setup you had for me, Mike. And that is, I'm interested in the waiter. I'm interested in the person cleaning the restroom. I'm interested in the president of the United States. Just put me in front of someone. And not more than a day or two go by that I don't either lead someone to the Lord or planted a lot of seeds. And again, that's natural to me. That's just, you know, as I like to say, all you have to do is follow the Bible naturally. Like, for instance, there's a whole debate on the supernatural. Let me tell you three words that'll explain who I am to anyone listening. I have a purpose in life. My purpose is to win souls to the Messiah, period. No other. I have a strategy. My strategy comes from the Bible. I call it the law of evangelism. It's when God wanted to reach the world, he started with a Jew, Abraham. When Jesus wanted to reach the world, he said, I go only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. When Paul, the apostle to the Gentiles, wanted to reach the Gentiles, he said in Romans 1:16, I go to the Jew first. I call that the law of evangelism. I have found out that when I prepare materials or I go to the Jew first in whatever city I'm in, it opens up a supernatural door for me to reach more and by the way, I'm interested in everyone, Jews, Muslims, Gentiles, everyone coming to know Jesus. But I can reach more Gentiles by going to the Jew first than by going to the Gentile first. And then I have so I have a purpose, I have a strategy, and then I have a method. The method is the Bible method. It's called Plan A. The church, by and large, uses Plan B, mental apologetics. Mental apologetics are very good when someone's interested, but most, especially Jewish people, have spiritual scales on our eyes. I have found how to penetrate the spiritual scales, and that is signs and wonders. People see my television show, It's Supernatural, and they think, well, he's just doing that because he's crazy about signs and wonders. No, I'm crazy about souls. And I know this, well, you didn't release it, but I know I saw with my very eyes a miracle in Jerusalem, not just Israel, but in Jerusalem, that to my knowledge has not occurred in the history of modern-day Israel, that tells me something prophetically. Can I go in and
tell you what? I'm going to jump in right now, and we are all eager to hear what's coming next. We come back, Sid is going to tell you what happened in Jerusalem and the effect of this miracle. Friends, my son-in-law, Ryan, has often traveled with Sid. This is no hype. This is reality. My dear friend Sid is not just doing this on TV. When he goes to the mall, he walks the mall, look for people to witness to, and in particular, he looks for Israelis that are found in malls all over America selling different things, and he shares the gospel with them. Perhaps God's stirring you now to begin sharing the gospel more openly and to go to the Jew first. So what happened in Jerusalem? We'll find out in a moment.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
That's the voice of Paul Wilbur. He was on the air with me last week talking about this amazing new docudrama, Let the Lion Roar. He makes an appearance on it as well, as does my dear friend Sid Roth. Well, I'll get to that in a moment. First, Sid, let's go to Jerusalem. What happened on this recent trip?
I did what I call a lecture on the supernatural. I've done this all over the world. But this isn't Berlin, Germany. This is not Washington, D.C. This is not Paris, France. This is Jerusalem, Israel. I rented the largest auditorium I could in the city of Jerusalem and promoted a lecture on the supernatural. I also asked believers in the Messiah not to come. They like to come to my meetings because they'll see miracles and perhaps get one for themselves. But I knew that I only had room for about 550 people, and I didn't want no space for non-believers. Well, we jam-packed the auditorium. Mike, 550 unsaved Jewish people that had never heard the gospel before came to my meeting. Now, this is what happens. I can't make it happen. I wish I could, but I can't. I'm not a healer. The only healer I know is the Messiah. And when I start the meeting, and they don't know I'm talking about God. They don't know I'm talking about Jesus. They just know I'm Jewish, and I'm going to give a lecture on the supernatural, and I advertise people will be healed. Now, Mike, you're a smart man. You can understand what would happen if I start talking about Yeshua, that's Hebrew for Jesus, and there are no miracles. They would either get up and walk in mass towards me or get up and walk in mass out the minute Yeshua's name is mentioned, Jerusalem, no less. So immediately I had what the Bible calls words of knowledge. I knew about what people were being healed of. I spoke the word, and this is before I even spoke. I mean, I get the mic, and boom, I get these words. And it happens all over the world. So I spoke these words, and about 20 people raised their hands. These are unsaved Jewish people, and they say they've just instantly been healed. That gives me their undivided attention. And for the next hour and a half, I shared my lecture on the supernatural, which was the most supernatural thing I know, and that was the testimony I spoke a little bit earlier of how I came to the Lord. And but they stayed in their seats, and then I gave the invitation at the end. And this I've never seen. First of all, I've never seen so many Jewish people stand up to be saved for the first time in their life. Second of all, I've never seen what I'm about ready to tell you. And I said, how would you like to know the same God I know, have the same love I have the same peace I have? Everyone that wants to pray a supernatural prayer for the Torah to live inside of them and to know the Messiah, I want you to stand up And in mass, 525 of the 550 stood up, made public professions of faith, and I might add, we're following up with all of them in what's called the Alpha Discipleship Course. And I am still in awe over what God did.
And you present clearly what this means. You don't just say, add Jesus in, you know, whatever other gods you have.
Oh, no. I talk about sin and righteousness and judgment. I list the sins. I said, look, if you're having sex outside of marriage and you think you're going to end up being where God is, you're meshuggah. You're crazy.
Yep. Yes, I mean, yes, Sid, this is unprecedented. It's some of the fruit that's coming from the decades of sowing what you've sown. But that, I mean, that's utterly remarkable. To get the people to come is a miracle. To get them to listen and stay is a miracle. And then to have those results is a miracle.
By the way, I did, for those, I went to Israel on my last tour to Israel, was about 8 months ago, and I had something similar that happened. I had half the number of people, and most stood up. And I've had, and I won't mention the names publicly, but people you know, the most outstanding Messianic Jews in Israel, one of them wrote me a scathing email. He says, Sid, don't you understand? Only one or two Jews come to the Lord in a year. That can't be true, what you said. Well, fortunately, on that meeting, I documented it with videotape, and on this meeting, I documented with videotape, so they don't have to take my word.
Amazing. And the eyewitnesses are there, and then the lasting fruit is there.
One of the eyewitnesses is your own son-in-law.
Yeah, that's why I referenced him. And he's a reliable reporter as well. He's seen it, and he's also been with you, as have I, in the restaurants as you're sharing the gospel with the waiter or with the person as we're leaving the restaurant. If there's souls, I know you're going to go after them, along with the 97-year-old man, Jewish man in the nursing home that needs Jesus that you'll go visit. Sid, I need you to stay on one more segment if you can, but 1 minute. We've just got 1 minute. You appeared on the Let the Lion Roar docudrama dressed in concentration camp clothes. What was that like?
Well, of course, my family is from Poland, and short of a miracle of God, I wouldn't have been alive today. I was born in the United States. I literally felt like I was in that concentration camp. I mean, something supernatural happened to me, Mike, and I stood up. And I said my lines, but it wasn't, I mean, I was like a different person. I was like someone in the concentration camp. I was just thrown back into that. And then when I finished, and I'm not saying this for applause of man, but the entire crew, all the TV people, everyone connected with it, stood up and applauded. But it wasn't me. It was something special that God did at that moment.
Yeah. Friends, this is something to see. And Sid, I've got one more question with you, and that is, why is it so important for the church to understand Israel? Why does this matter? So, Sid, I appreciate you giving us so much time in the midst of your intense schedule. And if you are listening now and you got to get out of your car or you're about to sign off, just go to my website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, and just click on Latest Broadcast. You can catch everything we say for here in the next hour and a half. But friends, I want to urge you right now to go to my website, askdrbrown.org, click on the special resource offer, watch the video where I open up the box, Let the Lion Roar, with the DVD and the Blu-ray disc and the book. When you order from us, you'll also get with it these exclusive interviews with Sid Roth and John Burness and Paul Wilbur and the narrator, Derek Frank. Only $40 postage paid for the entire package. Order on the website or call 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. By the way, this is a tremendous holiday gift to get and to give out. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to the Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. I will have some time to take your calls and interact with you. 866-348-7884. Anything you want to discuss with me, any questions you want to raise, we will have some time to take your calls after this segment. But first, a few more minutes with my dear friend of 30 years, Sid Roth. Sid, we are both Jewish, and we both feel it's important for the church to understand God's purposes for Israel and God's ongoing call on the Jewish people. But it's not for either of us a matter of being Jewish, and that's why we do it. If God sent us to Mongolia, we joyfully go. Why is it so important for the church as the church, for Gentile believers as Gentile believers, to understand Israel and God's ongoing purposes for Israel? Why does it matter?
Well, Paul put it this way: my heart's desire and prayer to God is that the Jewish people would be saved. I would give up my very salvation for my brethren after the flesh. It is at this moment in history that God is supernaturally removing the spiritual scales from the eyes of Jewish people. Now, I believe that Malachi, the last chapter, Amos, the last chapter is about ready to take place. And Amos says, in the last days, God will restore the tabernacle of David. The word tabernacle could be translated, as it is in English, tabernacle, but it could also be translated house or family of David. Who's the family of David? The Jewish people. And it says when they are restored, it will trigger the greatest Gentile revival that the world has ever seen. It says there'll be so much fruit in Amos, and read it in this context, there'll be so much fruit at the harvest, they won't be able to get all the fruit off the vine before it's the next season to harvest again. And we have never had a harvest like that before. I report as an eyewitness that Jewish people, most people don't know it because they're not even sharing with Gentiles, let alone Jewish people. I'm reporting to you right now, God is doing something amazing with Jewish people. As a brand new believer, I came in the early 70s with a move of God's Spirit on the Jesus people, which hit Jews as well as others. But there has not been a move of God's Spirit until now. And I believe those that are reaching out to Jewish people right now, right at this moment, are going to see a greater openness than they've ever seen in their life to be a catalyst for the greatest Gentile revival in history, and then Jesus is going to be here.
That, friends, if that does not light a fire in your heart and stir vision, then you need to ask God to save you because something is missing. Sid, I'm looking at the pictures. At Sid Roth, S-I-D-R-O-T-H, SidRoth.org. I'm looking at the pictures of your meetings in Jerusalem. I'm looking at the picture where it says nearly 525 out of 550 unsaved Jews stand to publicly profess Jesus as Messiah in Jerusalem. I'm looking at the picture and the people standing through the auditorium. And if that's the harvest that we're seeing among Jewish people, what does that mean for the fullness of the Gentiles? Sid, it is an honor to have you on the air, and thank you for your ongoing testimony of faithfulness to the Lord. We bless you and believe for greater things in the days ahead than we've ever seen.
And I pray the same for you in Yeshua's name.
Amen. Friends, that was Sid Roth. If you missed any part of our interview, please go to the website later today, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. And just click on latest broadcast. A few hours from now, it will be up. It's always up just a few hours after the show. Thanks to Joey and team that are so faithful to get this online and get it out in podcast so many, many others can benefit. We come back. I want to set the record straight on a few controversial issues.
The Line. Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to the Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. You know, for many years, I would listen to Sid Roth before I was a friend and on the air with him. And he would do these interviews. His show was normally 15 minutes a day on the radio. And he'd do these compelling interviews. And I'd be listening. Maybe I was able to listen 3 days out of five, right? And maybe it's Thursday, and the interview is kind of culminating. It's getting more and more exciting. I'm not going to be able to listen Friday. And we're doing the interview, and he'd say to the person, all right, now, what happened? You were falling off the side of the mountain. You're on Mount Everest. You were falling off the side of the mountain. There was an avalanche. All you could see is the snow crashing down. You know you're going to die. What happened? And the guy would start to respond, and he'd go, up, we're out of time. And I thought, I want to hear what happened next. I want to know what happened next. And I can't be there to listen tomorrow. And I guess I'm going to have to order the tapes to, you know, the cassette tapes back in those days to hear it. So I've been on with Sid so many times as a guest. And sometimes he'd ask me a question, you know, the life and death question, and I'm about to answer it. Oh, we're out of time. But funnily enough, I didn't plan it like this, but funnily enough, we end up with one of these cliffhanger segments in the first segment we had, and had to bring you back for the second one. So I was smiling to myself that it happened like that. All right. I want to set the record straight. I also want to open up the phones. If you have anything you want to ask me, anything you want to challenge me on, don't try to debate me on Twitter. Please, please don't try to debate me on Twitter. For a number of reasons. One, it's 140 characters at a time. It's almost impossible to have really substantive, intellectually rigorous, scripturally sound debates in that format. Secondly, I don't have time. I don't see vast majority of social media comments that come in. And in addition, I'm writing all the time, and then I'm doing radio and I'm speaking. And people get offended because I can't debate them while doing live radio. All right, let's try this, Matt. I'm going to have a debate with someone while doing live radio. Oh, did it get quiet for all? Yeah, that's because I'm not going to be able to do those two things at the same time. However, the phone lines are open. And if you really wonder about, so what do I really believe? You know, I heard this about you, and it didn't sound right, or I heard this, or what? Where do you stand on this? Give me a call. And if you're one of those who listens and you differ, I promise if you will deal with actual issues and not sidestep them. Sometimes I do get, not angry, but a little frustrated with people that won't answer questions directly, and I have to cut things short or jump in. But if you will deal with issues honestly, I would love to hear your differences or your honest questions. And if you have a Bible-related question, I may have time for some calls as well. 866-348-7884. Okay. What do I actually believe in terms of Christians and society? What do I actually believe about followers of Jesus and the nation? Do I believe that we should have a theocracy? Now, there are some Christians who advocate this. Here, so theocracy, I'll just use the first definitions I see online. Dictionary.reference.com. Theocracy, a form of government in which God or a deity is recognized as the supreme civil ruler. The gods or deities' laws being interpreted by the ecclesiastical authorities. Wikipedia definition. Theocracy is a form of government in which a deity is officially recognized as the civil ruler. An official policy is governed by officials regarded as divinely guided or is pursuant to the doctrine of a particular religion or religious group. Do I advocate a theocracy? No, of course not. Was ancient Israel a theocracy? Absolutely. God appeared to the entire nation. God delivered the entire nation out of Egypt, then appeared to them, then gave them the promised land, and then said, I am your God and you are my people. Do you accept my will, my commandments, my teaching, my law? They said yes, and he said, then we have an agreement. That's a theocracy. In the Muslim world today, a country like Iran seeks to operate as a theocracy, and that's why it persecutes and oppresses religious minorities. And that's why it seeks to impose law on everyone based on the Quran and Islamic tradition. You say, but Mike, you're doing the same thing in America. You want America to turn back to God. You want America to recognize its so-called Christian roots. You want to forbid gays to marry based on what the Bible says. You want to forbid abortion based on what the Bible says. That's a theocracy. Ah, I understand the point. And I understand how, from a secular viewpoint, you might feel that way. Of course, you make a ridiculous jump when you then compare us to Iran or compare conservative followers of Jesus to ISIS or the Taliban or Boko Haram or Al-Qaeda. You make a murderous, false, deceitful, destructive, dangerous, misleading jump when you do that. But what about the charges that I want America to turn to God? Oh, absolutely. I want Americans to turn to God and to cry out to him. And I want us to recognize God for who he is, the God of the entire universe, the God who created all, the God who is the God of every nation. In terms of he is the creator and the one to whom all human beings will give account. But I want to have a freely elected president who does not impose religion on the nation or does not impose the absence of religion on the nation, but rather governs the people fairly and rightly. I want freely elected congressmen and women and those who will serve and governors and mayor and city officials. And the more God-fearing people we have, the better, because I believe God-fearing people, those who truly honor him and know him, will do what's best for the country. You say, that's a theocracy. No, no, it's not. Because a religion is not being imposed, nor are we making a religious requirement for a leader, nor are we seeking to suppress other viewpoints. I want our views to prevail in a democratic society. I want our views to win out in a democratic society. You say, but you're imposing your beliefs on us when you want to outlaw elective abortions. I'm saying that our argument is that life begins at conception, that every life is valuable, that babies in the womb should be protected. That's my view. Is it based on scripture? Yes, also based on observation, also based on ultrasounds and things like that. Now, you may read the Bible and come up with a different view. I think it's a totally wrong view, but you may read the Bible and come up with a different view. Is that your right? You can come up with a different view, and then you can try to get people to vote based on that. Or you can vote based on that, or you can govern based on that if you're elected. Based on my understanding of what's best for society, I oppose two men or two women, quote, marrying and raising children. I oppose that based on what I believe is best for society and based on what I understand the scriptures say. They go hand in hand to me. Now, there are others who read the Bible and come to different conclusions. And there are, quote, gay Christians who are advocating two men or two women marrying based on their reading of scripture. Do they have a right to? Of course. Do I believe they're wrong? Of course. But do they have a right to? Of course. And what about an atheist? An atheist may have a different viewpoint of all these things. Does that atheist have a right to advocate for their point of view? Absolutely. And then we do our best to get our viewpoints to prevail through fair and honest discussion and dialogue. That is not a theocracy. I am not saying that if anyone worked on a Sunday or a Saturday, depending on when someone said the Sabbath was, they should be put to death. I am not saying that if you commit adultery, you should go to jail. Or if two men sleep with each other, they should go to jail. I'm not saying that. What I am saying is that I will do my best to encourage Americans to turn to God and turn away from sin and cry out to him, so that God will have mercy on us and restore us and that we can be in right relationship with him. Proverbs 14:34 says, righteousness exalts a nation, sin is a reproach to any people. This is a universal principle. Certain things are bad for us, certain things are good for us. You know, debt and gluttony and greed and immorality and all kinds of things, these things are bad for us. I'm talking about wrongly incurred debt. These things are bad for us. Living by God's principles is good for us. But it has nothing to do with a theocracy. When Jesus returns, will there be a theocracy? You bet. And that'll be a wonderful day. But until then, we advocate for the positions we hold to based on our beliefs or non-beliefs in a democratic society. That's what I advocate for. So let's separate the myth from fact. Right back with your calls. Stay right there.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. I think in the next hour, I am going to record audio and video, record a response to President Clinton's remarks at the Human Rights Campaign fundraising dinner. Of course, they present themselves as the victims with a $45 million annual budget and with speakers like President Clinton and Eric Holder and Vice President Biden and Barack Obama, President Obama. So I'll probably respond to that. You'll be able to see it. We'll put it up sometime tomorrow or the day after on YouTube, and you'll be able to watch it by going to AskDrBrown.org and clicking on latest video. Let's go to the phones. My buddy Seiko in Houston, Texas. How you doing, man?
Dr. Brown, how you doing, sir?
Doing very well. What's on your mind?
Man, I'm reading the book, Our Hands Are Stained With Blood, and I can't hardly put it down. I'm almost 50% done with the book.
Mm.
And this book is eye-opening for me. It's eye-opening. It's grieving. Grievous to me, all this, and encouraging as well. But I'm just taken away and taken back by some of the statements that have been made about the Jewish people, and you know me, you know Dr. Brown, I'm a Calvinist, but I'm not reformed in all of my theology. I land with Christian lands and a lot of other stuff, but I've always had love for the Jewish people, and I know there's been debate about that, but I believe the promises of what God told Abraham, those who bless, I'll bless; those who curse, I'm going to curse. So. But I appreciate your work in the book, and I just wanted to personally, publicly thank you for taking a bold stance in this effort, even though this book is years old, but it's still relevant, I believe, today.
Well, thank you for sharing that. And, of course, it's one of the things, Seiko, that as Jewish believers we get hit with immediately. Either we know our history and we know what's happened to our Jewish people at the hands of so-called Christians or even true Christians over the centuries. So either we know it before we get saved, or the moment we get saved, as was my case, we're confronted with this. And it's always surprising that so much of the church doesn't know it. Here you're an educated man, you've studied and read for years, and yet these things are new to you. And that's why I wrote the book, that the church would feel the pain that the Jewish people have felt and then thereby turn to prayer. Was there anything in particular that struck you as the most shocking as you read Our Hands Are Stained With Blood?
Oh, man, Doc. Look, the statements by Augustine, Luther, I mean, you know, when you hear these things, I remember some of the stuff, but there's more statements that these men have made that I'll be honest with you, that you would have to question whether or not these people were truly saved. But you can't hate a person like this and then wish death on a person like this because of a misunderstanding of what you believe they did, you know, in earlier times or in biblical times. And like you said in the book, it's not like the Jews were sinless. They have their flaws, just like all of us do. They crucified the Messiah. But to have an adverse hatred for an ethnic group and then claim to be Christian, it just baffles me. I mean, it really baffles me. And I know a lot of people like to try to defend Luther and Calvin and these guys, and I'm like, I don't defend sin. I expose it.
Yeah, it is painful. It is very difficult to understand how some of the leaders could go as far as they did. And tragically with Luther, not just about Jewish people, sadly with other groups as well. I mean, Could you imagine us defending anyone who did something like that today? But I appreciate your courage. And I know you let me know you downloaded the book. Could you use a physical copy as well?
Yeah, that'd be great. That'd be great. I really appreciate that. I plan on getting the DVD series because I heard your podcast last week with the other brother. I forgot his name, but I think the Lion Roar. I think
That's
Roar.
The Lion Roar. Yes, sir.
That's the Lion Roar. Yeah, I plan on getting that DVD, brother, because I told my wife I got to get that.
All right, tell you what. Stay right there, okay? And I have no idea if you celebrate Christmas holidays or anything like that, but I'm going to send you an early holiday gift. It's going to be a little while. Betsy will get back to you. And I want to send you as a gift, Let the Lion Roar. It's DVD and Blu-ray disc. And it will also have the book by Derek Frank about this great deception that's gone on for so many years. So I just want to send that to you as a gift. Stay there, Seiko, and then Betsy will get your address to send this to in a moment. Friends, I want to encourage you to find out why it is that this brother, this pastor, has a radio show of his own, why he is calling the show to thank me for writing Our Hands Are Stained with Blood. The book came out in 1992. It's been continuously in print ever since. And now, for the first time, there is a docudrama. There is a narrated docudrama that takes you back through church history and shows you what actually happened, shows you. Actors like Kevin Sorbo and Stephen Baldwin will act out the roles of John Calvin and others with their quotes and show you why it's so critically important for the church to get this right. When you order from us, though, you'll also get exclusive interviews like the one I just did with Sid Roth on CD, exclusive interviews. So you get the DVD, the Blu-ray, the book, and a couple of CDs with all of the special interviews that we've done with these guests. So go to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org right now to order, or call 1-800-278-9978, 1-800-278-9978. Got time for one more call. Herb in Charlotte, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hello, Dr. Brown. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I encounter frequently people who say, don't judge. And I have a response. And they say, well, do you sin? You know, you shouldn't judge. But I have a response. I say, well, Jesus classified two levels of sins. One is a speck in your eye, and the other is a log in your eye. And Jesus saved me from alcoholism. And so I say, well, if I was still an alcoholic, I would be. I still have a log in my eye. I still have specks in my eye. But
yep.
I think by not having a genuine log in my eye, I can. The specs in my eyes should not stop me from being critical of
right.
some other.
Okay. Right. And Herb, that's scripturally accurate. Matthew 7:1-5. That is scripturally accurate. I'd also add in, so I would sometimes respond, and thank God he delivered you from alcohol. That's awesome to hear. Sometimes I would respond like this. I'd say, so in other words, if we lived in the days of slavery, we shouldn't judge the slave traders. And today we shouldn't judge people who engage in human trafficking, right? And we shouldn't judge ISIS. Is that what you're saying? Oh, no. What I mean is, so they'll say that, you know, they'll have to turn that around quickly. And I'll say, look, Jesus says in John 7:24, don't judge by outward appearance, but make righteous judgments. And say that we all make righteous judgments, and we need to. What Jesus was against was judging superficially, judging hypocritically, and condemning others. In a false way. That's what Jesus opposed. But without righteous judgment, the world would completely fall apart. And my friend Frank Turek says, when someone says, stop judging me, he says to them, why are you judging me for judging you? So you're absolutely right, Herb. It's good to show the error of that. And you're doing it by looking at Matthew 7:1-5. Remember, friends, to check out my latest article, AskDrBrown.org. My bottom line today: something dramatic, powerful, wonderful, glorious happens to the church when it begins to pray for the salvation of the lost sheep of the house of Israel and bring the gospel to them. Well, did I say it or not? What is the myth? What is the fact? What's the rumor? What's the truth? We're going to set the record straight today. Some exciting interviews also.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know who went after me the other day? Well, not by name, but included in a group of people. Former President Clinton. Yeah, he was not happy with some of us and, of course, misrepresented what we're doing. I'll set the record straight on that in a little while and set the record straight on a few other controversial issues where I often get misquoted and falsely accused. But first, I want to deal with something that is a pressing, unavoidable issue. Michael Brown, welcome to The Line of Fire. Number to call to engage any of the issues we talk about today, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. I'm holding in my hands an article from the Charlotte Observer from October 25th, and it says this: when a federal judge cleared the legal path for same-sex marriage in North Carolina earlier this month, it set off a flurry of weddings and celebrations, mostly in urban areas of the state. But the joy was hardly unanimous, including among some public officials whose jobs include performing marriages. At least six magistrates have quit or announced their resignation since same-sex marriages became legal October 10th, the Observer found. Some left 20-year jobs that paid more than $50,000. Their decisions, they said, were based on religious beliefs. According to Gail Myrick, 64 years old, former Union County magistrate, when you have convictions about something, you've drawn your line in the sand. If it, meaning marrying gay couples, was not a consideration to me at any cost. Joining me on The Line of Fire is Austin Nimux. He serves as senior legal counsel with the Alliance Defending Freedom in Washington, D.C. Regional Service Center, where he litigates as a member of the Marriage Litigation Center. I've had the privilege of sitting in on meetings with him as we discuss strategy. Austin, welcome to The Line of Fire.
Oh, always a pleasure, Dr. Brown. Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, thanks for joining us again. It's always great to have ADF attorneys on the air with us. We've got 2 minutes now, and then we'll come back just for a couple more minutes on the other side of the break. But can we safely ignore the issue of redefining marriage? Is this just some passing thing that's going to go away and we don't have to deal with it? Or is this an unavoidable issue for followers of Jesus today?
It's really an unavoidable issue when you see the exhibition of what I would call intolerance for Christians and people of religious beliefs being displayed by same-sex marriage supporters. I mean, the idea that magistrates who have been long-serving public servants in the state of North Carolina and other states cannot be accommodated for their religious beliefs is absolutely astounding. The memo that was sent out in North Carolina saying you must violate your religious conviction, telling these magistrates they must perform same-sex ceremonies when there are so many options available. These are not the only magistrates in the state. There are lots of magistrates. Of course, clergy are empowered to solemnize these unions. And in North Carolina, you can actually get your marriage solemnized in any county. It doesn't have to be the county in which you get your license. So there's all these options available. No same-sex couple in this country has ever been denied the ability to find somebody to perform their ceremony, and yet we're forcing the hand of these folks, telling them they must violate their religious beliefs instead of appropriately accommodating them and being tolerant. That's a sad day when we're hearing something like that.
And friends, this is a battle that came knocking at our door. It's not a battle that we went looking for. Friends, I encourage you to go to telladf.org to find out more about many such cases taking place around the country. We come back. I've just got two questions to ask Austin Nimux. First question is having to do with businesses, with not just a church or a pastor, but businesses. I mean, are businesses constitutionally protected? Do they have religious freedoms? And what if our religious beliefs are bogus or bad? Should those be protected? We'll be right back. Change the world.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on The Line of Fire. My guest, Austin Nimux, with the Alliance Defending Freedom. They've been on the front lines of so many critically important issues taking place in America today, including the government's extreme overreach. Lesbian activist Mayor Anise Parker and her team, their extreme overreach, their, quote, inquisition and witch hunt of pastors in Houston. Austin, I remember talking to your colleague Joe Infranco, longtime friend of mine, years back, and we were both saying we never expected to be in the midst of these conflicts. This is nothing that the ADF went looking for, is it?
No, not at all. I mean, nobody sets out to have other folks, entities, groups be intolerant towards them, especially when we're talking about religion. When we think about the history of this country and the foundations upon which it's built with regard to religious freedom, the very idea that we would have intolerance in our society for religious individuals is really astounding.
Absolutely. Now, let's just address two issues quickly. Recently, President Obama, in his ongoing, quote, evolution of viewpoint regarding same-sex so-called marriage, has now found a constitutional right for it. And obviously, this is going to up the ante of the cultural battle that's taking place. It's one thing to say, look, a church, what you do in your church building and your synagogue, that's between you and God, but you can't impose that on society. So if you have a business, your business has to serve everyone. So if you are a florist and you're asked to cater a gay wedding ceremony, you have to do that. I mean, can we deduce anything constitutionally about this? How can we decide what's right or wrong on an issue like that?
Yeah, it's really amazing to hear people advocate that we fought a civil war and passed three amendments after that somehow for same-sex marriage. And we hear the president say that there's a constitutional right to same-sex marriage, but he forgets that the Constitution also has a First Amendment in it. And that First Amendment applies to everybody. Our founding fathers did not say if you're non-profit or if you're for-profit. Those are tax designations. The First Amendment applies to everybody. And we saw this with the HHS mandate cases and the Hobby Lobby case, and we learned a great lesson that whether you're for-profit or non-profit, it doesn't matter. We all have the same First Amendment right. And to tell a florist or a wedding photographer or a caterer or a disc jockey or whomever who provides their services to weddings, and that's how they make their living, that you must perform every single thing that's asked upon you that you have no right to ever decline, is really unfortunate, especially when you consider that same-sex couples have been able to get everything they want to. I mean, Michael, I'm sure that everybody knows about the New Mexico wedding photographer that we represented.
You know,
that same-sex couple, they got a photographer. They got pictures. That wasn't a problem. But then they had the intolerance to go after a Christian because she didn't agree with them. That's really unfortunate. If we're going to live in a tolerant society, we need to practice that and start remembering that religious people have rights too.
All right, so let's say that we turn this around. Last question for you, because we'll often be hit with this and sometimes not know how to respond. Let's say that you have a white supremacist printer. He has a print shop, and you go in there, and you're a African-American couple, and you say, I'd like you to print up, you know, a small town, and I'd like you to print up our wedding invitations that we'll be sending out. And he says, no, I don't deal with, and he uses a defamatory name towards them. And he says, that's what my church teaches. We're a white supremacist church. That's what we teach. So we have to then tolerate that? Is that how it goes?
Well, I don't think that guy is going to be in business very long, because I see as soon as people find out what he stands for, they're not going to frequent his shop, and so he's going to run himself out of business. But, you know, racism is about keeping the races apart for no good reason. Marriage is about bringing the two halves of humanity together for a deep social good. And people who have a religious belief in that, that's a good religious belief, and it should be honored and respected. And that's a totally different question than red herrings about racism. And unfortunately, we hear that a lot. But, you know, by the same standards that we hear so many in the left propagating, we would force a black photographer to take pictures against their will of a KKK rally.
Exactly.
And is that really what our country is founded upon? We need to respect people's beliefs. And you know what? If a same-sex couple runs into a religious florist, as one we're representing in Washington State, and she doesn't want to help them, you know what? You can get flowers down the road. You don't always get everything you want the first time out. That's why we have a free market and we have choices. And we need to start practicing more tolerance for folks and quit persecuting people just because they don't agree with us.
Yeah, and in point of fact, those who have been bullied have sadly become the bullies, and the bullying is backfiring, as it did with Chick-fil-A, as it did with Duck Dynasty and Phil Robertson, and as it is now in Houston, Texas as well. Americans don't side with bullies, and the gay activist movement has really become a bullying movement, which is so ironic when it was built on a victimization platform. But the fact is, we're not forcing Orthodox Jewish caterers to work on the Sabbath. We're not forcing Muslim caterers to supply pork. Why are we forcing Christian caterers' businesses to participate in same-sex so-called wedding ceremonies? Austin, thank you for the clarity, and may God's blessings be with you and the team in the coming days.
Thank you. You too, Dr. Brown. Appreciate it so much.
All right. My joy. All right, friends. Again, I'm speaking all over North Carolina right now. This radio broadcast emanates from North Carolina. It was first and foremost sent out to North Carolina, and then from there we've expanded across the country. But I'm speaking to all of our major cities in Charlotte and Raleigh and Winston-Salem. I'm speaking to all of you and saying right now, activist judges and then the Supreme Court's non-decision have caused the overthrowing of the will of the people in North Carolina. The overthrowing of the will of the people. How do you feel about that? How do you feel about the fact that you worked hard, pastors and leaders, you worked hard to mobilize people to vote to uphold marriage. You worked hard to preserve marriage in the state. Those standing to preserve marriage were outspent, I believe, at least 2-1. And yet, marriage prevailed by a vote of 61% to 39%. And we said, no, we're not going to redefine it. Activist judges and then the Supreme Court's non-decision have caused the will of the people to be overthrown. And now people of honor and integrity are saying, I will lose my job rather than violate my convictions. It is utterly outrageous. It is utterly outrageous that this can happen on our watch. Now, I am not encouraging anger towards anyone. Yeah, I'm displeased with activist judges' decisions. I'm displeased with the Supreme Court opening up a can of worms by overturning DOMA last year. And making other statements and decisions that open the door for this, and then taking a non-active stance and not responding to something that they basically set in motion, that's disappointing. The last thing I'm saying is be angry at gays and lesbians who say, hey, we want to commit to each other in a lasting relationship and have the same benefits that you have as heterosexuals. I'm not mad at them. I understand their perspective. I grieve because it's not what God intended. I grieve because God has something better. I grieve because God did not make men to be with men or women to be with women. I agree because no matter how devoted the parents are, by their lifestyle choice, what they do, ultimately committing together in, quote, marriage or being together, that is a choice. I'm not saying they chose the feelings or the attractions, but the decisions they make, those are choices. No matter how committed they may be to their kids, it still grieves me that those kids, by the choice of the two women or the two men, have now deprived that child of either mother or father. I was at a church service yesterday speaking in Chicago. And there was the dad with one of his three sons. They've got three boys and a girl, and dad with son. And I thought, you know, there is something unique between a father-son relationship that no mother can provide. And there's something unique between a mother-daughter relationship that no father can provide. And there's something unique between a mother-son relationship and a father-daughter relationship that a mother or father can't provide. Friends, these are major, major issues. And now, as we have warned for years, they have become a direct assault on our freedom of speech, religion, and conscience. I want to encourage you, when you vote next Tuesday in North Carolina and all around the country where you hear my voice, I want to encourage you to vote for candidates who are pro-life and to vote for candidates who are pro-family. And by pro-family, I mean they believe in marriage as the union of a man and a woman. They believe that the best household is one that can provide a committed mom and a committed dad to a child. And they are candidates that, at the same time, deplore the destruction of heterosexual marriage. So I want to encourage you to vote. If you have to cross party lines, do it. If you have to go differently than your family, do it. Look, I am not a registered Republican. I have a big issue with the Republican establishment. Often Republican candidates are the ones who are pro-life and pro-family and pro-Israel, and I vote for them. Sometimes I vote with hesitation here and there. I have to sit an election out or skip certain candidates because I just can't vote for any with good conscience. But I warned, friends, I warned before President Obama was elected that he would be the most radical pro-abortion president and pro-gay activist president in our history. Many didn't believe me. Well, sadly, it's true. I still pray that God will do something radical in his life these last 2 years of service. But vote responsibly. Do the right thing. And then stand for righteous laws in your state while reaching out with compassion to all.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I also want to say that I think that the effort to take the HRC International is profoundly important. There are people who lost their battles to hold you back in the United States who think they can take the show on the road and win somewhere else.
Ah, that was the voice of former President Bill Clinton speaking at a recent fundraising dinner for the Human Rights Campaign, the HRC. And when he was speaking about those who allegedly failed to stop gay activism here in America, now taking their show on the road to other countries, actually, he was referring to people like me, according to the HRC, that is, that have put me on their list of, quote, exporting hate around the world. You know, here are the facts, Mr. Clinton. Here are the facts to everyone else that wants to know the truth. First, as far as gay activism here in America, we want what's right for everyone. We want what's right for the family. We want what's right and best for America. And when you see public opinion shift so dramatically and radically as it has in recent years, and people are so terribly misinformed about facts, you realize a lot of it is media influence. A lot of it is due to misinformation. Look, the Centers of Disease Control here in America and the Office of National Statistics in the UK both did major surveys and found that 1.6% of the population in America and in the UK identify as gay or lesbian. 1.6%. That's less than 1 in 60. And yet when George Gallup did a poll on this a few years back, he found that Americans thought that 25% of the population was gay, 1 in 4, and young people thought it was closer to 1 in 3. In other words, there's a tremendous amount of misinformation circulating. All I want is for people to know the truth. Is that wrong? I want people to know the truth about what's taught in our children's schools. I want people to know the truth about health risks and things like that, especially for men who have sex with men. Is that wrong? Is that hate for people to know the truth? Is it wrong? Is it hate to talk about bathroom bills now where a man who identifies as a woman has the right to go into a woman's bathroom and there's nothing that the business establishment or the women can do about it? Is that right? Is that fair? Is it right and fair to oppose conservative Christians who say, listen, in good conscience, I can't bake a cake for your same-sex wedding, and that person's not going to be fined and potentially put out of business? Is that right? Is it right that those who were once bullied have become the bullies? And when we go to other countries, far from demonizing people, I do the exact opposite. I speak graciously and kindly, and I make clear that I am not out to demonize anyone. And I make clear on top of that that some of the nicest people you know, family members, friends, co-workers, may be gay and lesbian. That's not the issue. The only question is, can we give you lessons we have learned from America? And as far as stopping things in America, oh, we're in the midst of a multi-generational issue. The pro-life, pro-family movement standing together for what's best in America, we're still in our early stages. Joey, let's go to clip number 14. Again, this is President Clinton, former President Clinton, speaking at the Human Rights Campaign fundraising dinner.
And it just breaks my heart that they put all that at risk to pursue what is essentially a political agenda, to isolate and demonize gay people for short-term political gain. And you need to be out there around the world. This is an interdependent world. And the good news is that power is more dispersed than ever before, thanks to the social media and all that. But it also permits movements to travel across national borders that are violent or that are emotionally and legally toxic.
So let me get this straight. First, short-term political gain. The people that HRC recently went out after, and to me, looking at their list, you don't have political people in there. You have Christians, you have people in ministry, you have many with tiny, tiny budgets. In fact, you take all the organizations combined in terms of money that's spent having to do with gay activist issues, put all the ministries, all the organizations together, and it'd be less than the HRC's budget with all the different ones they go after in terms of our designated funds that would go towards issues having to do with LGBT things. But it's wrong for us, as followers of Jesus, who love the Lord and who care about other people, it's wrong for us to go to other nations when they contact us and say, tell us your experiences, share your experiences in America dealing with gay activism. What can we learn? What can we understand? And we go to other countries to share these things graciously and lovingly. That's wrong. That's wrong. But it's good for the HRC to use its power to intimidate and pressure and spread lies and misinformation about good people. That's right. So it's wrong for us to share truth internationally, but it's right for the HRC to spread lies, misinformation, and try to intimidate and bully internationally. And you take a country like Uganda. Christian leaders in America spoke against the death penalty and other harsh penalties that were being imposed for homosexual practice while standing with Uganda to say, yeah, gay activist curriculum should be kept out of schools. I think we should all protect kids as best as we can. And we said to Uganda, hey, don't be kowtowed by monetary pressure from America. Do what you feel is right, but do it in a compassionate way. So we expressed our differences. And then we express solidarity where we could agree. That's wrong, but it's right to put pressure and to say, unless you conform to our views of sexuality, as far as it goes, unless you conform to our views of sexuality, then we're going to put every kind of pressure on you and intimidate and bully. Mr. Clinton, you're standing with the wrong people here. One more clip, clip number 15, Bill Clinton speaking at HRC.
I believe that in ways large and small, peaceful and sometimes violent, that the biggest threat to the future of our children and grandchildren is the poison of identity politics that preaches that our differences are far more important than our common humanity.
Oh, Mr. Clinton, did you say those words and really think about what you were saying? The toxic poison that is conveyed in your words that instills hatred to conservative Christians and conservative Jews and conservative Muslims as well? Do you realize the poison of your words that divides and that tells hundreds of millions of committed followers of Jesus around the world, peace-loving, non-violent people, that tells them that they do not have the right to believe what they've always believed, that they do not have the right to say that God did not design a man to be with another man, and that it's best for a kid to be joined with a loving father and a loving mother? Do you realize how toxic and poisonous your words are, and you're practicing the very identity politics that you deplore? One more question, sir. When you in the past and your wife, Mrs. Clinton, in the past opposed redefining marriage and stood for marriage, what changed? Was it political expediency? Was it the shifting tides of culture? Did you ever have real convictions on this? Can we really believe you now? We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the line of fire, 866-34-TRUTH. I want to set the record straight on a number of issues today. First hour, I addressed the question of, do I advocate a theocracy? Do I want America to be a theocracy? And my answer was categorically no. When Jesus returns, there will be a theocracy. I welcome that and look forward to that. Until then, attempts at setting up a theocracy will be destructive and will fail. So I do not advocate a theocracy. All right? What about the law of Moses? What about the Torah? Do I advocate that all believers observe the law of Moses? Do I advocate that Gentile followers of Jesus, as well as Jewish followers of Jesus, observe the law of Moses as much as possible? Do I advocate that we celebrate not only the seventh-day Sabbath, but commemorate every new moon? Do I advocate that all ritual purity laws are kept? Do I advocate that all believers, Jew and Gentile alike, observe the dietary laws? Do I say that you are missing on God's best if you do not observe the law of Moses? And I'm talking about specific things that were given to Israel in the Old Testament that are not reiterated in the New Testament. Do I teach that God requires that it is God's best for Jewish and Gentile believers alike to all observe the law of Moses? No. No. Never taught that once in my life. I'm falsely accused of that. Do I believe the law is holy, just, and good? Absolutely. Do I believe Jesus fulfills the law rather than abolishes? Absolutely. Do I believe that we are impoverished if we do not rightly understand the law and its place? Absolutely. Do I believe that every single believer can learn from and grow in many ways by studying the Torah, by studying the whole of the Old Testament? Do I believe they can learn from that, that they can grow by that? Absolutely. Do I believe we do ourselves a disservice when we disparage the law and when we discard it? Absolutely. But we must understand the place and role that it plays. We must understand that we are now under a new and better covenant. We must understand that God did not give the Sinai covenant to the whole world, but only to the house of Israel. And then the new covenant given to the house of Israel and Judah is now made available to all through the blood of Jesus shed for all people and through Israel being a light to the nations. So there was a time when, if you lived among the Jewish people as an alien, that you would keep the law of Moses. And there was a time when Israel would be a light to the nations by keeping the law of Moses, but now we have a new and better covenant. You say, yes, but God made eternal promises to Israel. The promises, that's his responsibility. You say, yeah, but God put Israel under eternal obligation and said, as long as you live, through all your generations, you must keep this. Yes, and Israel failed, and Israel failed, and Israel failed. The Jewish people fell short. So God said, I will make a new and better covenant because of the continual failure of my people. Otherwise, they'd be utterly destroyed. If God did not have mercy on us and just judged us by our works, we'd no longer be a people. Yes, there are many sincere Jews, and there are many who are seeking to follow God. And I know many devout rabbis who are very, very serious about wanting to please God and follow him. The problem is they're human beings, and we all fall short, and we fall short in such ways that ultimately our sins would damn us. So God gave us a new and better covenant that brings to fulfillment the purposes of God under the Sinai covenant. So dispel the myth. I do not teach that you need the law of Moses for salvation, and I do not teach in particular for a Gentile believer, but for all, that you need the law of Moses in order to fully please God by way of obedience to as much of it as you can keep. However, if you cut the law out in terms of its purpose and place in God's economy, you will be the worse for it. 866-34-TRUTH. Feel free to weigh in. I've got more to cover.
God of light, hear our cry, send the fire. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-348-7884. All right, I'm going to go to another. Tell you what, Joey, let's grab clip number 12. I think I'm going to play this now. I do want to clarify one more area where some people may misunderstand what I believe and others just falsely attack and accuse. Of course, that's their business. But here and there, I'll take time to set things straight. And if you want to weigh in on a controversy that I have raised or a controversial issue, if you want to take issue with me, then by all means, do so. Before I do that, before the soundbite, let me just say one thing. I just noticed a comment on Facebook. I don't see the vast majority of comments, but I just saw one that said, "I love you, Dr. Brown. I think your tone was just a tad too inflamed with the Calvinist caller last Friday. With all due respect, I appreciate you very much." That would have been a few days earlier, but I responded, "Thanks for your candor." Yeah, we did have a caller, and I guess was it Friday? I was on the road doing the broadcast, and we had a caller, Ian from Texas. And we were discussing issues of perseverance in the saints. I was frustrated, and I felt that there was just such a twisting of verses in each time I was just trying to raise a simple scriptural point that actually the Calvinist view was being misrepresented. And I'm not a defender of Calvinism, but I want it to be represented properly. I'm not a basher of Calvinism either. But I got a little frustrated, and I jumped in a few times. I kept the caller on extra, but I jumped in a few times to differ. Was I too aggressive? Probably so, and I apologize. If you're listening in, I was probably too aggressive. I didn't go back and listen, but shortly after the show, I wondered, and the fact that someone made that comment that I spotted, yeah, my apologies for being too aggressive. I say probably because I didn't listen back, but let's assume that I was. So my apologies for that. If you're listening, please do accept them. In the midst of our differences, even if I can't give someone more airtime, I need to do it in a more polite, gracious way. So please forgive me for falling short there. All right. Clip number 12. This is President Obama. A little bit over a week ago. This is in an interview he gave with France's Canal Plus TV channel. Listen to what he has to say.
The United States and the West generally, we have to educate ourselves more effectively on Islam. One of the points I want to make is that if you actually took the number of Muslims, Americans, we'd be one of the largest Muslim countries in the world. And so, there's got to be a better dialogue and a better understanding between the two people.
All right. First, let's just run percentages here. Matt, what's the percentage of Muslims in America? Let's just look at that. And then the idea that would make us one of the largest Muslim countries in the world. Huh? I mean, what kind of math is that? Let's just say Muslims were 4% of the American population, just hypothetically. Then that would put us about 12 million worldwide. Well, does that light a candle to Indonesia, which is 1.5%, right? So that's 1.5%. That's 4.5 million. It's 4.5 million. That would make us one of the largest Muslim countries in the world. Is our president kidding us? Are you serious? That would make us one of the largest Muslim countries in the world. That would make us one of the smallest Muslim countries in the world. If you just took our population, just get online, look at populations of Muslim countries, but start with Indonesia, which is 270 million, and the vast majority of those are Muslim. Then go to Pakistan, which is 195 million, and the vast majority of those are Muslim. And then start your work your way down, go to countries like Egypt, and many, many, many. You're going to go way down the list before you get to a Muslim country, 5 million or less. So that's completely wrong, factually false. But do we need to get better educated? Absolutely. But honestly so. Honestly so. Yeah, someone just commented to me that that's a delusional comment. Yeah, I mean, how could the president be that radically wrong on something like that? And Matt, if you have a minute, just get Muslim countries by population, and let's see how many are on the other side of that. But here, we posted a graphic on our Facebook page the other day that said for all those defending Islam who say only 7 to 10% of Muslims worldwide are radical, and by the way, that's a low estimate. It's more like 15 or 20%. But to all those who say that, all right, to all those who say that, what about the fact that it's estimated that there was a similar percentage of Germans who were Nazis? And in other words, we are not indicting all Muslims. If you're a Muslim listener, I'm not saying that you're just like Al-Qaeda or ISIS. I'm not saying that you want to behead your neighbor, okay? The vast majority of Muslims, I understand, are moderate, and many moderate leaders have spoken out against the extremes. I recognize that. That's been happening more and more, and I appreciate that, although I also question the accuracy of some of the statements being made, and I've written about that as well. But when we educate, let's say that there are, let's just use 15% as a figure. So we're dealing with probably about 200 million radical Muslims worldwide, two-thirds of the population of America worldwide, radical Muslims. So let's educate honestly, and let's get people to understand why we're having radical Islamic attacks here on Americans, on American soil. Let's look at why it's taking place in the UK. Let's look at why it's taking place in Canada. This is a natural result of radical Islam. So let's educate, but let's tell the whole story. And let's not demonize people like Robert Spencer or Bridget Gabriel or Pamela Geller or others who want to get out information about radical Islam or Walid Shuba. No, I'm not going to agree with every statement that every one of them makes or every advertising campaign, but I am going to agree that they are doing what needs to be done in terms of exposing radical Islam. By the way, according to one figure just sent to me, if you take our Muslim population, that makes us number 38. That makes us number 38 worldwide in terms of numbers of Muslims. Wild. Matt, if you haven't sent me if you resend me the link to the president speaking about that, I may write on it as well. Let me go to my friend Bishop Harris in Durham, North Carolina. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Oh, God bless you, Dr. Brown. And can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yes. First of all, I want to compliment and say that you are one of the greatest apologists of all times. That God has raised up now to deal with and be a voice for the body of Christ when you speak out concerning about gay marriage and gay issues, and especially in North Carolina, you ask how we feel down here. I'm a pastor in North Carolina, and I am disgusted, very disgusted, with how we've been strong-armed and just kind of ran over, and I see you being so gracious and how you communicate and how you reach out and how you express in your books and how you try to talk. And so I dare they try to attack you, but I know it's the enemy, you know, trying to attack you on being gracious. If anything, they need to accuse you of being over-gracious, and you're not a sympathizer, but at the same time, you're being gracious and sticking to the truth. And we're grieved now, but we're ready to fight, and we're just believe in God to rally together pastors and all we need to do, sign petitions, fight with the ACLJ, with Rob Shane, and all we need to do to try to get this back overturned here in North Carolina. Because we are disgusted that it passed in North Carolina.
And thank you for the kind words. And listen, as I'm speaking, I know that very frequently, for example, There's one very gracious, civil woman that lives in Charlotte who's lesbian, who is in a committed relationship with her partner, I guess just got, quote, married, raising kids together. And she interacts with me. She's not a believer. She interacts with me sometimes, and I'm able sometimes to interact on Facebook, still looking forward to sitting with her face-to-face. In my mind, when I'm talking to you, sir, as a godly pastor, committed to the word, committed to righteousness, excuse me, I'm speaking to this lesbian woman who's seeking to order her life in a way that she feels is best and best for her kids. And I want to speak truth and love to everyone. But I want to say 100%, sir, that we need people like you on the front lines helping to rally believers to do two things. Reach out to those who identify as gay and lesbian, bisexual, transgender. Reach out with compassion. Reach out with love in our churches and our communities. That's one. And two, stand firmly against gay activism. Bishop, I believe we'll see the day when these unrighteous acts of activist judges will be overturned. We're in this together. I've got a break, but thank you, sir. We're standing together for righteousness in our state, what's best for marriage and family. And I believe God's best ways will prevail. Keep up the good work.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, I want to address one more issue, let me do this first. Clip number 9, this is the voice of Kevin Sorbo, who joined me on the air last week. This is the voice of Kevin Sorbo. And he plays the role of John Calvin in the compelling docudrama Let the Lion Roar. Let's listen to what John Calvin once wrote. Clip number 9.
How can the Jewish people who do not accept Jesus have any standing with God?
But didn't God give an everlasting promise to love them?
Chapter 2, Ephesians verse 8 says, "It is by grace you have been saved through faith." There is no exception clause about national identity being a means of salvation, even for the Jewish people from whom our Lord came.
Now that particular clip is an imaginary dialogue, that Derek Frank, the narrator, has with John Calvin. Now, I agree with what Calvin says as words are put on his lips, that there is no national salvation for Israel or individual salvation for Israel outside of Jesus. I completely differ with John Calvin, who basically, the comments have to be called anti-Semitic. Oh, it's not a fraction of what Martin Luther said. Not a fraction of what Martin Luther said and did. You can't even compare them. But John Calvin's harsh words about the Jewish people as a whole, they're anti-Semitic. And when he says he's never even met a single Jew ever in his life who had even the slightest hint of piety or anything like this, is it anti-Semitic if he never met one? No, but if he never met a religious Jew and read the prayers of a religious Jew and heard the heart of a religious Jew, then he shouldn't make a categorical statement about the Jewish people. And if he had heard what a religious Jew said and really heard their heart, he'd know, okay, they don't see Jesus, but many are zealous for God and zealous for the law and zealously seeking. Let's pray for them because they're so near and yet so far. So the compelling docudrama Let the Lion Roar. You get the book, you get the DVD, you get the Blu-ray disc, and you also get the exclusive interviews we've done with John Burness, Paul Wilbur, Derek Frank, Sid Roth, that are tremendous interviews in and of themselves. You get those on CD, only $40, postage paid, and it's really nicely packaged. Really nicely packaged, so it'll be a great holiday gift. Go to my website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, and then make sure you click on the video to watch. Right on the homepage, click on that. You'll see a video where I open the box. I had a little fun with this. I hadn't had a resource package like this, so I had a little fun with it. So you'll enjoy watching it. Or you can call 1-800-278-9978, 1-800-278-9978, and we should be shipping everything out. I think we're doing our last relevant interview tomorrow, and then we'll be shipping them out in just a few days. Okay. I was sent by a few people links to a recent video attacking me and responding to alleged comments I made about the other person. Of course, the comments were terribly misrepresented. The descriptions of me were so off base that if they had been accurate, I would have been ashamed of that. But anyway, I reached out to the fellow as graciously as I could. So far, I haven't heard back. But I'll continue to reach out. I'm interested to see people whole in God and moving forward in God. And if someone's zealous, well, let me help them. If there's some blind spots, and I ask others, you see blind spots in me, you come along and help me. But someone watch this and post it. Poor old Dr. Brown is a Pharisee. And to be honest, hasn't got a clue what grace, the gospel, and peradventure, who the real Christ is. And then someone else responds in a, and then it says, also, I get wound up by those who say grace is a license to sin. And he goes on from there. And then someone else says, and Dr. Brown is evil and perverts the gospel. Ah, so got it. So by saying that the only way to God is through Jesus, that's being, quote, a Pharisee, and to saying that God saves us freely by his grace and not by our works, not by our good works, not by our praying, our fasting, not by our not sinning, but by his grace, he saves us freely as a gift through faith in his son, that's perverting the gospel. Sounds like the gospel to me. That's very interesting. And when I write categorically in my book, Hyper Grace, that all the hyper grace leaders I have heard say that grace is not a license to sin, how then are you going to turn around and accuse me of saying that hyper grace teachers teach that grace is a license to sin? I have said the opposite about them. What I have said is because of other errors in the teaching, it can open the door to people to sin. But that the hyper grace leaders categorically say it's not a license to sin. The fellow who put out the video against me, I didn't watch all of it, but the fellow who put out the video against me, and there's a lot of stuff that comes out against me, and I respond to some if I can do it in a constructive way, and often will reach out to the people involved behind the scenes. But in point of fact, the fellow that did the video against me, I quote him as saying that grace completely eradicates your sinful nature, and if you struggle with sin, you're probably not even saved. That's what he writes. I don't get blasted. I don't mind getting blasted for quoting me accurately and differing with me. I put a lot of stuff out. Of course I'm going to get blasted. I differ with people. My friend Rabbi Shmuley wrote a book, Kosher Jesus. I wrote a response book, The Real Kosher Jesus. Of course I expect people to come back after me. John MacArthur wrote Strange Fire. I wrote Authentic Fire. Of course I expect people to now respond. So I write Hyper Grace. Paul Ellis writes a response to my Hyper Grace book. My Hyper Grace book was a response to others. Let's have at it. Let's have all the discussion we can just represent it fairly and accurately. And your position, whoever you are, I'm just speaking generically. Your position's got to be terribly weak if the only way you can enforce it is by demonizing me. That's one of the issues with gay activism. What a terribly weak position they have when they have to reinforce it by lying about me and spreading falsehoods about me and others. And I'm not concerned for me. I'm a big boy. I can take it. And any of us that are on the front lines, I mean, if we're speaking about issues, we better be able to take it. If we can't take disagreement or people demonizing us or attacking us, then we're in the wrong place. But I still feel bad that people believe lies because it's unhealthy for them. It's unhealthy for them. So you want to know what I believe about Hyper Grace? Read the Hyper Grace book or listen to my free videos online where I teach on it at length. But don't believe the demonizing lies and the false accusations. That's just unhealthy. Grace and truth go hand in hand. And don't try to hold on to grace at the expense of truth or truth at the expense of grace, because true grace and real truth go hand in hand. And by God's grace, that's what I want to advocate. You can have hyper grace. I'll take biblical grace and celebrate that until I see the Lord face to face by his grace and goodness, which by his grace, I do not plan on rejecting. My bottom line today, feel free to differ with me all you want. Feel free to attack my positions. Just quote me accurately and in context. That's all I ask.